What you got there?
Homebrew. I gotta make another batch for Christmas.
Don't panic. For the next hour, let Steve and Paul talk you down from that ledge, right here on RFI. They're the host who won't cop out when there's panic all about.
Welcome to the Don't Panic Radio Show. My name is Steve Benson, and sitting right over there is Paul Schultz.
Hey, how you doing?
Nothing you're about to hear is true. Thanks for tuning in this week. It's a very special week here at the Don't Panic Radio Show, because we're still basking in the glow of having produced our first episode of our other podcast, which is called Rough Draft. Not to plug it too much, but
You
should go subscribe to Rough Draft real quick. Wait a minute. I don't think we've published our first show yet. Okay, well, hang on. You can pre-order it. If you pre-order it, you'll get special extras like the director's cut.
That's right. We'll do a running commentary of the podcast.
Now, that would be funny. And then I said, here's why I'm about to say that one thing.
Dude, we need to do that.
Yeah. It's like the MST3K of podcasting.
Yeah. We'll do running commentary of like our early shows.
We'll do running commentary of Do It Indie Radio Hour. So, speaking of director's cut and special extras and all that stuff, it's weird how any movie these days, to try to get you to actually pay money for it, they're adding stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like they're like part of the movie making process now is, okay, now we got to make the parts of the movie that regular people won't get to see.
Right.
So that we could get people to pay more money for it.
Yeah. Like, remember back when they used to be gag reels, and then gag reels turned into like the ensemble gag reels where they would have the music in the background? People were like looking forward to it. That's when gag reels jumped the shark.
I used to love the whole there would be whole specials of just bloopers, right? Mm-hmm. And you'd get to see, that's back when there were only three shows on, and it was like the eight same actors on every show. They'd show up on Love Boat once in a while. We didn't watch Love Boat, but they might show up on MASH or something. And then they go, oh, we're going to have bloopers this week. And we used to love those.
Mm-hmm.
Until I remember, I always figured those, and they were spontaneous bloopers. Mm-hmm. Just they had the tape and they're like, let's splice it together and make it, you know, show people. I remember watching a cartoon one time, and after the cartoon was over, they showed the outtakes of the cartoon. And I thought, now that is smart. I forget what cartoon that was. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
I know they've done it for like the CGI cartoons where they would show early animation, and it was kind of silly. You know, they put the regular, and then they'd have the actors like come in and like put in like silly lines, like if something got messed up. But I don't know exactly which cartoon you're referring to.
I don't either.
And you were there.
And I was there. But the one I'm talking about, that it wasn't like early animation or anything. It was that they would be like going through a scene and one of the characters would crack up, you know, and like the cartoon character would crack up and they'd go, I'm sorry. Let's do it again. Or they'd flub a line or something like that, you know. I just always thought that was funny. But then you're right. Then it went from, hey, let's take the tape that was on the floor and splice it together, either show it at the end of the movie or whatever. It went from that to, oh, we have to produce some stuff to put with the DVD so that people will maybe buy the DVD. Now, you ask me, I'm not so sure. I guess it's sort of like the what's it like? I guess
miniature
golf. Miniature golf, exactly. It's sort of like the music, like when Napster first came out and people were downloading music for free, and people would talk about, yeah, but you can't get the, wait a minute, it's CDs now or cassette tapes or whatever it was when Napster came out. I guess it was CDs.
Yeah, it was CDs.
Which once they came out with CDs, the one of the great things about getting vinyl was you got this giant work of art that came with it.
Mm-hmm.
You could hang it on your wall, right?
Yeah.
And they would do things like sometimes you'd get the lyrics in there, sometimes you'd
physical graffiti had like when you pull out the album, it would have like the holes in the building where the windows were. You know, they would do all kinds of three-dimensional drawings. I think Sticky Fingers had an actual zipper on the cover, but nice. You can't put that on a CD. And then eventually, album art went away, and it just became pictures of the band standing there.
Usually in some awkward position to make it look cool.
Yeah.
Now, for Superfan James and those in his generation, I think we have to make something clear. And that is, they didn't do the fancy art stuff on the albums. I mean, I'm sure part of it was, you know, a marketing thing. But the thing is, that was the only way you could own the music.
Mm-hmm.
You could either try to get lucky and hear it on the radio.
We all grew up with a blank cassette tape in our recorder.
Ready to hit record. I didn't own a cassette recorder until I was like 10 or 12, you know, so it's not like those were ubiquitous. So you could either get lucky and hear it on the radio, or you had to go out and buy the vinyl.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had you already. They didn't have to do the, ooh, let's make this fancy album so that people will buy this music. There was no other way to get it. So then CDs come out, and that goes away, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Napster comes along, and now you can just get the music for free. You don't have to pay for it. Now they have to go back to figuring out ways to get people to want to buy the CD. Except the music industry didn't do that.
Nope.
Instead of trying to figure out other ways to get people to buy the CD, they just started suing first Napster, and Napster said, hey, we just provide the technology. We're not giving anybody anything. And then they started suing the people who were downloading the music.
Yeah.
I just remember hearing about, like, Frank Westmoreland in Junction Springs, Iowa, was sued by Napster for having 50,000 unlicensed whatevers, and they sued him for $12,000 and $12,432. And I'm going, what are they doing? What is the music industry doing? And I actually got in a debate with a guy, an argument, really. Probably more of an argument than a debate. Anyway, he said it was perfectly fine. You know, the music's there. It's available for me to download. I'm downloading it. And I said, but you're stealing. And he's like, no, I'm not. What do you mean, no, you're not? You're stealing the music. He's like, well, it's out there. I mean, all I'm doing is downloading it. I said, well, if you were to walk into a store and they didn't have good security on their CDs and you were able just to pick one up and walk out with it, wouldn't that be stealing? He's like, well, they should have better security for their CDs. Like, I think we're having a semantic argument here.
It's just going to go around and around.
Yeah, exactly. So then I heard they started suing people, and I thought, well, maybe that's smart, because then, you know, people go, I'm not going to do that because I might get sued.
Right.
But it was kind of like crossing the Rubicon. Once it became possible to get the music without having to go to the store, you know, pick out, like, find the album, buy the album, get it home, have a record player, or even a CD or CD player.
Mm.
And so I think then people started buying the CD, and what people were doing is they were ripping the CD onto their hard drive and then making it available via Napster. Mm-hmm. So they started trying to encrypt the CDs to make it so you couldn't rip it onto your hard drive. So then people started going, well, if I want to have it on my computer, I can't get it off of the CD I bought. So I guess I got to download it from Napster.
Except they were making encryption breakers as fast as they were making encryption codes, though.
Ain't that the truth?
I still can't wrap my head around buying like an MP3 file.
Oh.
It's like buying air.
Yeah. Like, what did I buy? You know, I don't know what I bought.
What did I buy? I mean, I've done it in the past, but I just, you know, it's too foreign.
Yeah, we're still, so all of that, as I don't know if I knew it back then, but it's obvious to me now that wasn't even the beginning. That was not even the beginning of the beginning. Mm-hmm. That was kind of like when you're going to go, you know, let's say you're going somewhere, you're going to your folks for Thanksgiving. You know, it's timely. Mm-hmm. Just had Thanksgiving. So, and you're supposed to be there at, say, 4. And you know it takes, you know, 20 minutes to get there. So if you're not out of the house by 20 till 4, you're going to be late. So you tell everybody you're leaving at 3:30. You don't mean that you're going to be leaving the house at 3:30. You mean the process of leaving is going to start at 3:30, which you know takes 10 minutes, right?
Yeah.
But that's not when you start. You start the whole process at around 10 after 3, going, how much longer is it going to take you to do your nails? How much longer? How come you're not in the shower yet? So that's what I'm talking about. That was that the Napster days were the when you start telling people, like, when are you going to get in the shower? Because we're starting the leaving process at 3:30, and it's 2:50, and you're not in the shower yet. That's what the Napster days were, because they still haven't figured it out. But they did do the thing that I said back in the day when I was arguing with this guy. I said, here's what I'll give you. I'll give you this. First of all, it is stealing. No, it's not. I told you, we're going to move on from that. All right. Moving on from the whether or not it's stealing. The fact is, the music industry has no way of fighting this trend. They're not going to stop the ubiquity of the music. Once the music's out there, it's out there. Mm-hmm. Nothing you can do about it. People are going to get hold of it, right? But most people recognize that, and this is what I love about the human race. There are plenty of things to hate about it. One of the things I love about it, especially in our society, and maybe it's not the human race, maybe it's just like our culture. I don't know if I mean Western culture or the U.S. or what, but in general, I think people get the sense that if they don't pay anything for stuff, you'll get what you pay for. And by that, I mean, if music is only consumed for free by everyone,
right,
you'll never be able to get a hold of good music. Now, you could maybe walk down to the corner and there'll be some guy there playing music, because people are still going to play music, but they're not going to go to the trouble of refining it, recording it, you know, getting it out there, advertising it to the point where it's widely available if there's no money in it, right?
Right, right.
So my theory was, and this is something this guy sort of got me into this way of thinking. He's like, the music industry has to realize that this is how people want to consume music. Mm-hmm. They no longer want to have to go to the store or order from Columbia House. That's how I got most of my CDs, is from Columbia House.
That's my first 20 or 30 came from Columbia House.
It was the 45 CDs for the price of half a stick of chewing gum.
I still owe them like $9, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, because you'd buy your half stick of chewing gum, but you'd keep getting the CD of the month. right? Mm-hmm. If you didn't remember to like send it back, you couldn't even tell them don't send it. You had to remember to get it back into the mail somehow. And if you forgot, it went out. You had to buy that. So that's not the model people wanted. The model people wanted was I want the electronic file. That way I can listen to it however I want on my computer or on my MP3 player, whatever, right? So that's what he was saying. And I was like, well, that makes sense. You know, yeah, okay, you're right. It's stealing. I'm now talking to the music industry. All right. And it's the music industry, for listeners who are more visual, picture this overweight gentleman sitting in a large leather chair, sort of leaning back. He's got a cigar in his mouth. And there's a window behind him with a city skyline. And right. He talks like this. I'm the music industry.
He has the huge flappy jowls and the
beak. Yes, he does. Yes. And when he talks, the cigar just kind of hovers there between his teeth.
Yeah. He's got that dry lip, so it just kind of like flaps.
That's right. Last week, I think he was running a newspaper. But
he wears many hats.
Yes. Yeah, he definitely wears hats. All right, so picture that guy, and I'm talking to him, and I'm like, look, all right, it's stealing. Yes, it is. However, you better quickly figure out a new model, or you're going to die, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So then iTunes comes out. There was probably stuff before iTunes that somebody is screaming into their radio right now. I'm like, what about blah, this other thing that you're not mentioning? And, but it made it easier. It made it, not only was it now easy to get the music you wanted, it took a while for them to do this, but they started allowing you to buy single songs.
Yeah.
It took a while because they were stuck in this, we're going to have the one hit that causes somebody to want to buy the whole album.
Yeah.
And then 29% of the album will be good and the other 71% will be okay, right, but so they wanted to keep that model. That had to go away, so you had so that's like, okay, if I can buy an individual song, that sweetens the pot. And then they started doing where in the phase that we're in now is the, well, if you buy the music from us, you will start getting added bonuses, like we'll make recommendations, like if you like that music, well, you'll probably like this music as well. And that kind of plays on something we were talking about last week, which was I'm getting our shows confused. I don't know if we were talking about it last week or on our other podcast, but the whole idea that there are a billion people making music now. How do I know what to listen to? Well,
yes.
You know, iTunes, Apple Music, Google Music, whatever other music service says, oh, we'll help you with that. Not to be a, like, gatekeeper and saying, like, you can't listen to it unless we tell you can listen to it, but more like, hey, here's some stuff you might like. So that's where we are now with music, but I don't think that's quite it. I mean, I think still, if I could get it for free, and if I weren't such a, like, I just can't regularly steal stuff. I'm fine with stealing things sometimes.
Well,
but
now they also have services. For the life of me, I can't think of any of them off the top of the names of them. But like, you can get like a monthly subscription or whatever to some music
thing. Well, there's
Spotify. Is that one of them?
Spotify, Pandora, Apple Music. That's a good point. Streaming. Those, in general, those are called streaming services. Yeah. And it's like the radio, only it starts to tailor itself to what you like. The other thing, like Apple Music is doing, and I think Spotify does this too, is you can listen to whatever song you want to on demand. Like, you just go, I want to hear Vaseline by Stone Temple Pilots. And you just hit that button, and a big, one of those giant box of gloves on a spring comes out of the screen and just punches you in the face and goes, why do you want to hear that? You go, sorry, I want to hear $10 Man by ZZ Top. Okay, that's more like it. It comes out and a hand comes out and strokes your hair gently.
Hands you a beer.
Hands you a beer. So, okay, so now that's the music journey, and I don't know where it's going next. Maybe it is that streaming thing. I don't know. Maybe we're still at the very beginning. Maybe we haven't even gotten to the starting the process of leaving yet.
Well, whatever it is, wherever we're headed and whatever we're doing clearly is still making money, or they would have stopped by now.
So, well,
I don't think the music industry is losing money the way it was, say, 10 years ago when everybody was using Napster and stuff like that.
I agree. And what it's changed, I believe. And this is where we need like MP or somebody to call in. If you're listening, MP, call in. I think you probably have your finger on the pulse of this kind of thing. But, you know, call on our super secret celebrity hotline. Well, we can't wait for him to call, so we'll just move on. So what I think has happened is the old school music industry, I don't know, I think they're gone, or maybe they just have Taylor Swift and Kanye and those bands or acts or whatever. The one, like, they don't even touch you unless you could sell 30 million records.
Right.
You know, if you have 14 million followers on Twitter, maybe you're at with the old school music industry people, you know.
I think there's just like three artists right now, and that's it. You know, I just think there's like probably three artists out there that are selling the billions and keeping the other, you know, 99% of the business afloat.
Right, kind
of like how porn keeps the internet afloat, you know.
The internet is great for porn, but then that makes me also wonder, where does local music fit into that? I go to, and I don't think anybody really knows. I mean,
yeah.
So you go to a local show. And they're still selling their CDs at the local show.
When you can usually buy them dirt cheap.
Are they on iTunes? Are they, I mean, can you, like, is there a local channel on iTunes? Can I just go to or Apple Music or Spotify or Pandora or wherever? Can you just go, you know, here's the thing. I know, okay, this, I hope we don't make the suits mad here, but Radio Free Indie, okay, is a model like when we were kids. You tune in and you get to hear local music, yes. But if there's something particular, a particular band, or if you hear something you like, what do? You know, you got to get lucky to hear the song you want to hear, because they're streaming, they're just playing song after song, right? They're playing whatever they want to play. You could go on a request, and your request will probably be played. You don't know exactly when. If you hear a song you like, I think you could go. I haven't even checked because I'm lazy, like most people. And let's face it, if you're listening to local music internet radio, you're probably high too. So lazy meets high, and you get nothing done. So you might be able to go to the website and see what songs have played recently.
They have a thing on the website that tells you what's currently playing. I mean, I've done it. I've heard a couple songs I've liked, and I went over and I've found them on, you know, other corners of the internet.
So I wonder if the big ones, Spotify and those guys, I wonder if they have a service like play only local music and, you know, learn what I like and suggest other local bands and, you know, with, And then you know, tie that in with whoever sells tickets around town, you know, whether it's Live Nation or whoever. And so I can get a notification when that band's playing and where they're playing. Maybe all that exists. We need our We need our local version of Superfan James, our local music fan version of that, to come in and tell us where technology stands these days.
We just really need MP for this.
For daily life, we just flat out need MP for everything. Speaking of 30 years ago, when we were kids, all of this reminds me of the, you know, every time a new technology is developed, somebody's dead on its heels inventing a way to hack it.
Mm-hmm.
So cable. I remember cable came out. First thing is everybody's 13-year-old son is climbing the damn telephone pole outside your house, like jiggling the wires up there and getting, like, you bought the basic cable package. He gets up there. Next thing you know, you got HBO. You got all the pay-per-view. You got everything, right? Then somebody comes out with a box you can buy. Like, here's a decoder, like, that you plug into the line. Then you don't got to climb up the pole anymore. It jailbreaks basically your cable box, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the cable company, like, you buy one of those. My dad would talk about it. Yeah, I was thought about buying one of those. I was like, we should get one. We can have HBO. And he's like, yeah, but they tell me, like, 6 months after you get it, the cable company changes their codes and it doesn't work anymore. And then you got to go buy another one. It was like, you buy another one. So the other one is available. Like, they change their codes and somebody somewhere figures out their codes or has their codes and is able to, like, yeah. And then we got the satellite. Like, then satellite starts coming out, right? Suddenly we can get everything because cable companies worked on the premise of once there were satellites available, they would beam their stuff to the local cable company via satellite. They had a satellite receiver dish, and then that the cable was run out to the houses. Well, somebody said, I'm just going to sell these satellite dishes to people. So we bought the satellite dish.
And somehow that was a legitimate industry.
It was. That was huge.
Yeah.
And then you didn't have to pay a monthly fee or anything. You just had the giant satellite dish, and as long as you knew where to point it in the sky, you got whatever channels were on that particular satellite.
We watched so many age inappropriate movies when you folks got that dish.
I tell you what, the biggest problem was the satellite that carried the Playboy channel was almost directly overhead of where my parents lived in geosynchronous orbit. And so you had to crank that satellite dish, which, kids, I'm not talking about DirecTV or whatever that other company. I forgot the other company that does satellite TV now, but I'm not talking about those little things. This thing was like twice the size of a kiddie pool.
Right. Yes. Imagine you're a bird and that's a bird bath. Mm. That's how big these things were.
That'd be, yeah, like if I were a bird.
Right, exactly. If you were a bird.
It's like a bird bath for an ostrich. So you had to turn that thing, and if it had been raining, it would have filled up with water because it had to be so vertical. Whereas, like, HBO and Showtime and the regular channels and all that stuff, it was a lot closer to the horizon, so the dish would be pointed, you know, more perpendicular to the ground. So anyway, so if my parents were, you know, in town or something, I'd call Paul up, say, get over here. You'd come running and jump over those bushes, and we would crank the satellite dish up, and we'd be sitting there watching the Playboy channel, and then if my parents came home early, they would immediately know what we were doing. It wasn't a matter of just quick change the channel because they could see the satellite dish pointing straight up into the sky. They're like, I know what they're doing. Oh, man, cheese it. Get out there and crank that satellite dish back there. So we had to pay Andy Thompson and Joe Ashcraft. One of them we would send up 925, and the other one we'd send up 900, County Road 900, and they would spot for us with those little Motorola walkie-talkies.
That's right.
They would tell us they're coming, and we'd run out quick and crank the thing. My dad at one time was about to spend money on a remote satellite dish repositioner, but then he heard or read or something that the cable company or whoever, you know, HBO and all of them were going to start encrypting their stuff, and you were going to have to buy a special box and pay a monthly fee in order to watch their stuff. He's like, I've only had this thing for a year, and now it's going to just be a giant, expensive lawn ornament, right? So then you could buy, of course, the box that would decrypt with the scrambling that they did, and it just went on and on from there. I took a caffeine pill just before the show. That's why I'm all wired up.
Okay. Well, maybe we should take a break and gather.
We should, yeah. Let's take a break.
Catch our breath.
Let's take a break and catch my breath.
Yes.
I'm going to go watch some Playboy TV. We'll be right back. Thanksgiving, you know, dinner is another one of those things that you could go all Amish if you want to. It's like they do make gravy and put it in jars that you can buy. Or you can buy a packet, you know, a spice packet with instructions. Or you can just go the old, like, just buy your chicken broth. Right, that's a little more Amish.
I think there's even an Amish brand chicken broth.
Yeah, probably.
It's called Amish.
Amish chicken broth. It's it's got the feathers in it because they don't believe in plucking the feathers. Another thing you can do is the day that you cook the turkey, which I've done this before. The day you cook the turkey, you can make your broth using turkey bones and the neck and the giblets and all that stuff. But you still have to buy the chicken broth. That makes it a little better. Well, this year I took, it's funny, it was called an Amish chicken, which his name was Jebediah.
That's right. And little suspenders.
Yeah. And I actually cooked it like 2 days ago and made broth with this chicken and bone broth, actually. And I always thought, is bone broth just broth? We just came up with a new name to make it sound more hippie, you know? But no, I looked it up. You put a little vinegar in the water when you do it, mm-hmm. and that extracts the calcium and other minerals out of the bones into the broth. So the bones, when you get done, are just like mush because all the goodness has been sucked out of them.
Dude, you never cease to amaze me with the stuff you make in the kitchen.
I know, right? If it weren't for the internet, I wouldn't be doing half this stuff.
You're goddamn like, right.
I'd be buying the packet, you know? I'd be like, give me a packet. I'd probably buy a jar of gravy. It's like, if anybody else wants to make gravy, feel free.
That's right.
But I went up and picked up the turkey today. I ordered it from Joe's Butcher Shop and Fish Market in Carmel, Indiana. You think I go to a lot of trouble. Listen to this. We usually got our turkey from a place called Good Earth. Good Earth something market or something. Anyway, you know, we can't have anything with antibiotics. Can't have anything that's, you know, I don't know, been exposed to the sun too much. It can only watch Oprah on TV. You know, all of our food has to be pure as the driven snow, right? So... and never frozen. Right. So I was like, I've been wanting to try this Joe's Butcher Shop. And Good Earth, you can't order online. And I hate talking to people. So I wonder if I could just order it online. And I got on there and you can. But there was this little thing that said, the story behind our turkeys. And I was like, all right, let me check this out. And they're like, if you bought a turkey from us in 2006, it was a fine turkey. It was good. But we knew we could do better. So we searched around and found a farm in Ohio that does sustainable turkey farming. And we just thought that would be a better source. And so we bought our turkeys from there. So you got a little bit better of a turkey. But then we decided that we wanted truly fresh turkeys. And the USDA definition of fresh is no older than 30 days. And has never gone below 26 degrees. 26 degrees is rock hard. For our international friends, rock hard does not always mean erection. Sometimes it means like something like that's frozen and as hard as a rock. All right. And 26 degrees Fahrenheit is like -4 Celsius. So there. Now that we got our now that we got our friends from Down Under caught up. Might. All right. So they said, we thought we could do better. We thought it should only be days old and should be sustainably raised. And it should never go under like 31 degrees, which wouldn't be rock hard. So we started working with this farmer and they're going across like the histories, like a 10-year history. And they're like, and so we decided to pay a premium to this farmer, and he grows these turkeys just for us. And so you're getting a turkey that was roaming around in its free range roaming area, probably within 2 or 3 days of when you picked it up from the store. I'm like, I like that. And then I told the kids this and Constance, and all week long, like, before I went and picked it up today, but like starting Sunday, it's like, do you think our turkey's still alive? Probably. Monday, do you think our turkey's still alive? Could be.
You get an email, a picture, the video, you know, of your turkey being its head getting chopped off.
Well, I was thinking that
it's holding a newspaper that has the time, the time and date.
So we were talking earlier about, you know, how do they sweeten the pot, so to speak, right? Make it like more enticing to buy. I think maybe that's in the future. Like you can, you don't buy a turkey anymore. You buy a turkey egg, and and then it's 24/7 webcast, and you get to watch this turkey hatch.
You're gonna have like Sally Struthers. Do you love turkey? I know I do. For just 5 cents a day.
For less than the cost of a cup of coffee a week.
You can buy the download of your turkey execution. You get to see the turkey's like running happy when it's little, you know. It's like
and if you're one of those who like it really fresh, we'll bring your turkey to you on Thanksgiving morning, still alive. And you can watch us butcher it, right? On your own kitchen table.
You're getting like letters in the mail. Dear Steve, from the turkey, you know, and it, all the R's are backwards because he's young, you know, he's like writing it because you're a sponsor.
Well, it's like those cows that make those billboards for Chick-fil-A.
Right.
Like, I've always wondered about those damn cows because I'm like, okay, I get it. Cows aren't super smart. They're not as smart as humans, right? But these particular cows have learned to write, okay? Which makes them pretty smart cows. How is it that they were smart enough to learn to write, but not spell or write their R's the right direction?
I think they just got caught up watching like Little Rascals episodes or something.
It's like when it's you...
The only thing was being... It was being pumped into the barn, you know?
Yeah. Well, when you learn a foreign language... Mm-hmm. Or if you've ever talked to anyone from another country, let's do it that way. So someone visits, our friend Michael visits, or he's a bad example because he's been ruined. He's half American, so that's a bad example.
Oh, Mike's a bad example all the way around.
Yeah, for just about anything. But, you know, your friend visits from France or Germany or something. Their English is perfect, right? It's like mm-hmm. better than our English. Because right. they might it's not know English. All the words, but they're not saying ain't, right?
Yeah.
They're not slurring. Like, their diction, their enunciation is I can't. Once I've said it once, I couldn't say it another time. Dixon.
How many dicks is that?
Are we in seventh grade? What's up with this? Anyway, their enunciation is perfect. It's sort of like that. I guess that's what bugs me about it. It's like, obviously, English is not that cow's first language, right? And writing English is not that cow's first way of nonverbal communication, right? So when he learned English, it's not like he learned it like everybody else, just like kind of learning it by watching old... you know, Little Rascals reruns. He was taught to write. And when they were teaching him to write, they didn't correct the backwards R.
Nobody went, yeah.
They're like, chicken has a C in it. And it's an E, not an I.
If we want to pass ourselves off, it's like Planet yeah. of the Apes. They've learned to write.
Yeah, they're in some dimly lit back room, and they're like, "All right, listen, Betsy, we saw that billboard you made. It was perfect. You spelled everything correctly, and your pen cowship was beyond reproach." She's like, "Oh, thank you. No, this isn't a compliment. Do you really think that they're just going to let a bunch of cows with perfect?" pen cowship and perfect grammar, they're not going to like be on to us? I mean, as long as we're spelling things wrong and we'll get the R's backwards and all that, ha ha ha, it's funny, look how cute the little cows are that can write. The minute they find out how smart we really are, this whole operation is going to be brought down.
Welcome back to the Don't Panic Radio Show.
There's probably a map in the middle of the room with like little, tanks and artillery units.
They're wearing berets, you know, and they got like the bandoliers of bullets.
Yeah,
they don't fit the gun they carry for some reason.
They say things like, "We lost a lot of good cows that day." Back in the Congo, in '64, it was just three of us. Against
45 chickens. You know, a lot of good cows died that day. We took a lot of those motherfuckers with us.
All right. Anyway, we should probably come back from break. What were we talking about? So anyway, we got the turkey from Joe's Butcher Shop.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a nice little place, too.
Yeah.
Again, all right. I know what the theme of the show this week is. It's all about, here you go. What's old is new again, or what's new is old again, or whatever that saying is.
Yes, which we also, we touched on that on that other show that we do as well.
Yes.
Not to shamelessly plug, because I have no shame.
So if you want to know, like when, this is something I heard that I didn't realize, and it was during another podcast I listened to, I think Freakonomics. They were talking about the future. And they were saying when a luxury item becomes widely available and basically almost free and becomes a commodity, the economics of it reverse and turn upside down.
How does that work for Jell-O? Because Jell-O was a luxury item that only rich people could eat. But it accidentally got boiled down to the powder, and they realized they could just add water and make it again. And it went from being this rich luxury, you know, thing that only rich people could have to anybody could eat Jell-O for like a penny.
That's probably a good example. So let's take Jell-O as our example. Jell-O, only rich people could have it, right? So the poor people had to do what? If they wanted a fruity, sugary flavor thing. Like, if they wanted something that tasted like strawberries, what did they have to do? They had to get strawberries, right? They had to find strawberries and buy the strawberries, and strawberries don't, you know, they go bad eventually, so it was a pain in the butt, right? But if only they could afford Jell-O, then they wouldn't have to worry about all that. So then Jell-O becomes like a penny, right? And now, what is the luxury item? People will pay a premium for a fresh strawberry.
Right.
Right? Whereas Jell-O, you could buy for little or nothing. So now Jell-O is thought of as, oh, that's what poor people eat because they can't get a good, real strawberry.
Yeah.
You just go to the Walmart or you go to the whatever, ShopRite, Safeway, Price Chopper place, and buy the Jell-O out of the box because that's what you could afford. So That's a great example, actually. So, like, this butcher shop I went to today is totally old school. I mean, they've got the meat cases. They've got, you know, set up and, you know, you order from the butcher, and they actually chop their own meat there. And then they've got all these, like, spices and sauces and stuff that you can buy. And I ordered the fresh turkey from them and everything, and I thought, you know, this is the whole grocery shopping model turned upside down. Because, you know, back in the day, like, you would go to the market and get whatever they had. You couldn't, like, order your food. You couldn't get it delivered, right? You had to go to the market and get it. You couldn't, you know, there was no one-stop shopping place where you could go and just get everything. You had to go to the local butcher, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now that food is everywhere, you can buy what appears to be premium steaks at Walmart, although if James were here, he would would refute that.
Well, but the key word there, Steve, is appears to be.
Yes, exactly. You can buy what looks like a really good cut of meat because they know how to make it look really good, right? Mm-hmm. But the only way that you can get a cut of meat that you know is actually good is go to a place that cuts their own steaks.
Right.
And so that's the economy turned upside down. Now, you can probably, and so here's the million-dollar idea for any of our listeners who wants to be an entrepreneur but isn't sure what business to start. Think of anything that was recently, say in the last 10 years, or will soon become sort of was a luxury item, but will soon become sort of commoditized. And then flip that upside down, and you provide the thing that used to be like ubiquitous, that or that only poor people got. You provide that. It's like handmade furniture. Who the hell back in the 60s would want handmade furniture? They'd say, no, give me something from the Sears Roebuck or the Montgomery Ward or whatever. You know, we know that's good. That's made in a factory where every single piece is made the same way. Yep. And there's quality control, right? I don't want some guy in his barn making it for me. No quality control. There's no boss breathing down his neck.
I mean, yeah, after all, they've only been doing it for like 800 years.
Now that, you know, the Chinese are pumping these things out like hotcakes, now the poor people go to Walmart and buy that shit, while the rich people go to the craftsman and say, make me a custom handmade piece of furniture.
You know, that's what I love about this show.
What?
This was not where we were going to go.
No.
And yet, here we are.
I'm not sure we knew where we were going to go when we started. Like, I don't think we...
I think part of the name of Don't Panic is also aimed at us.
Yeah, don't panic. You'll think of something.
The show is there. We just haven't found it yet.
My brain just started doing calisthenics.
This is where we disappear in a cloud of logic.
Ah, just like God. Well, all right then. I think that should just about do it. To our friends and our family, we're grateful to each of you for loving us, for hating us, for loving to hate us. And we're grateful for you listening. And we're thankful that you tell a friend.
As long as I elicit an emotion out of you, I'm grateful.
Thank you for liking our page. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for telling a friend about our show. Do It Indie Radio Hour is next with MP Pumpkin Spice and Tolan. For Paul Schultz, I'm Steve Benson. Nothing you just heard was true.
bullshit.